This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We urge that equitable representation of Africa. We argue that equitable representation of Africa will better equip the United Nations to tackle global challenges.
That's Sierra Leone's President Julius Maada Bio on his country's commitment to obtaining 2 permanent seats for Africa on the Security Council. Details coming up. Also, President Joe Biden will make his long-awaited visit to Africa next month. And Egypt-Somalia ties grow amid shared mistrust of Ethiopia. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. In his last speech as president before the 79th session of the United Nations General Assembly, President Joe Biden made a call to the international community to speak with one voice and tell the warring generals in Sudan to stop tearing their country apart. Here is our reporter at the UN, Margaret Bashir.
Yeah, the president was very strong on Sudan. He said the world needs to stop arming the two generals that are fighting there, and the international community must speak with one voice and tell them to stop tearing their country apart, to stop blocking aid to their people, and to end the war. And he said this to a lot of applause in the General Assembly Hall. Today, there's a meeting being co-hosted by the UN Humanitarian Office and the Refugee Agency, along with the United States and the African Union, the European Union, the Egyptians and the Saudis. And that's about the humanitarian response. And U.S. Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield just announced at this meeting an additional $424 million for the emergency response in Sudan and in the neighboring countries, which have taken over 2 million refugees from Sudan and returnees. So that was a major announcement. And the United Nations also announced that they are giving $18 million from their Central Emergency Relief Fund to the Sudan crisis. There is a lot of concern here about the deteriorating food security situation.
Now that you mentioned U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, she's actually leading a U.S. effort to expand the Security Council with 2 seats for Africa.
Yeah, she made that announcement last week in a speech in New York. And on Sunday, the U.N. General Assembly at their Summit of the Future, they adopted this wide-ranging pact called the Pact for the Future. And one of the key elements in it is about reforming the Security Council, about the need to make it more representative, inclusive, efficient, specifically says to redress the historical injustice against Africa as a priority. And that's because when the Security Council and the United Nations were born after World War II, a lot of countries in Africa were not yet independent, and they were living under colonial rule at that time. And so they didn't have real representation on the council. They were never considered for a permanent seat. And so over decades, there has been a push here for more representation for not just Africa, but from the global south in general. Latin America would like to have a permanent seat. Asia would like one. Say, look, the world has changed. It's almost 100 years, you know, since the Security Council was developed, established. So there's a real momentum now to see a permanent seat, at least one for Africa. The United States, you're right, Linda Thomas-Greenfield said in her speech last week that the United States, the Biden administration, is ready to support 2. But there's one caveat. They're not willing to support a veto. So new permanent members would not have a veto in the U.S. perspective. And I think we can be pretty sure Russia and China would agree with them on that. Maybe France and the British might be a little more amenable to some sort of sharing of the veto. They're not as attached to their veto as the other 3 are. They haven't used it, in fact, since 1989.
Our UN reporter, Margaret Bashir, she spoke with me from New York. Nigeria has joined the growing calls by African leaders at the 79th UN General Assembly in New York for UN Security Council reforms. Africa has long called for permanent representation at the world's highest Security Council. While delivering a speech at an interactive dialogue which took place on the sidelines of the summit, Nigeria's defense minister said reforms will promote inclusivity and deepen global peace and security, but but as Timothy Obiezu reports, some regional analysts are skeptical.
As the high-level debates at the 79th UN General Assembly get underway in New York, world leaders are expected to reach a consensus on global reforms. But the stakes couldn't be higher for Africa, a continent seeking at least two permanent seats at the UN Security Council. On the sidelines of the General Assembly Monday, Nigeria's Defense Minister Muhammad Badaru made the call to reform the Security Council, saying it will promote fairness and inclusivity.
We have been in 41 different United Nations missions to provide security across the world. Based on that background and the effort of Africa, we also call on the United Nations to reform in the United Nations Security Council so that Africa can have a permanent seat. It is time we deserve it for justice and for equity.
Nigeria's not the only African nation clamoring for change. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa on Sunday said, placing the fate of the world's security in the hands of a select few when it is the vast majority who bear the brunt of these threats is unjust, unfair, and unsustainable, end quote. Similarly, Kenya's William Ruto also criticized the multilateral system, saying, quote, it has proven inadequate, end quote. In 2005, the African Union adopted the so-called Ezowene Consensus in Ethiopia for Africa to have at least two permanent and five non-permanent seats of the UN Council. Security analyst Senator Irebu supports Africa's bid, but says there's more.
Whether Africa should be represented is a right call. Nigeria stands in the right mix because of one, is one of the most important countries in Africa and also the most populous nation in Africa with a huge economic potential. Because just being a member of UN Security Council doesn't guarantee you stability at home if all the factors that are causing insecurity are not well addressed.
Many African countries were still under colonial rule at the time the UN Security Council was established. But each year, the UN General Assembly elects five new members from different geographical zones for two-year terms on the council. Africa has three rotational seats on the 15-member council. The founder of Security Watch Africa Initiative, Patrick Agbambu, says Africa needs to be united to make a good representation.
So the biggest threat to Africa getting a seat is Africa itself. Africa do not have a united front. They do not have a common voice to be able to push maybe two country or one country forward. You can't go for such with a divided house. As it stands, the various blocs in the African Union seems very divided, with each having a very strong opposition to the others. The world is just watching Africa.
African leaders are also calling for global financial institutions reforms and debt restructuring. Last week, the United States, one of the five permanent members of the UN Security Council, said it's open to two African seats but without veto power. In the meantime, Nigerian authorities will be hoping to secure a seat. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
As you just heard, African nations have called for reform of the UN and the Security Council. Yesterday, leaders from African nations spoke before the General Assembly and advocated for change. Sierra Leone's President Julius Madabayo said the continent has long been marginalized and his country is committed to obtaining two permanent seats for Africa on the Security Council and two additional non-permanent seats. Bayo said the solving global challenges such as climate change and ending wars requires the collective efforts of all regions, not just wealthy or powerful countries.
We argue that equitable representation of Africa will better equip the United Nations to tackle global challenges and foster a more just, fair, and peaceful world.
Nigeria's Vice President Kashim Shettima also backed the calls for African nations to have a permanent presence on the Security Council. He went on to say that for greater prosperity, there should be reforms to world trade, international banking and lending systems, and one anti-corruption and taxation laws. Shettima also said developing nations need help to ease their debt burden.
We must ensure that any reform of the international financial system includes comprehensive debt relief measures to enable sustainable financing for development. Countries of the Global South cannot make meaningful economic progress without special concessions and a review of their current debt burden.
You can find all the latest news on the UN General Assembly this week on voaafrica.com, our Facebook and Instagram feeds, and voanews.com. President Biden announced at the UN General Assembly in New York that the U.S. is donating 1 million Mpox vaccine doses and at least $500 million to African nations to support their response to the outbreak that has killed hundreds of people in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Dr. Amash Adalja, an infectious disease physician, stepped outside the Johns Hopkins Hospital in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, to tell VOA's Carol Van Dam the impact of the donation and says what Africa really suffers from is a lack of countermeasures.
The reason why the West, including the United States, was able to handle their prior Mpox outbreaks was partly because of medical countermeasures, including, you know, a highly effective vaccine. So when you really want to control an infectious disease, a vaccine is the best means to do it. It's just that Africa has not had any real ability to vaccinate its at-risk populations against Mpox. So while they need for the continent of Africa 10 million doses, any increment toward that 10 million goal is going to be beneficial at controlling what is an out-of-control outbreak.
Since the start of the year, how many cases are there now of Mpox? How many people have died in DR Congo?
Since the beginning of this year through the end of August, there's been at least 20,000 cases of Mpox in the DRC, with approximately 700 people dead from the infection.
And since it began, it seems like it was focused in the center and the northwest of the Congo, but it has spread quickly. Where else is Mpox now?
Well, Mpox has left the DRC and into neighboring countries. Particularly one that's of concern is Burundi, and other neighboring countries are also reporting cases of Mpox, a disease that they had never diagnosed before. That was what was behind the World Health Organization's declaration of a public health emergency of international concern when this virus spread across the DRC border into neighboring countries.
Do you think Biden's appeal today in New York to other nations to follow suit and send, you know, more Mpox vaccines to Africa, vaccine doses, will help?
I do think that the more people that draw attention to what's going on with Mpox in Africa, the better. And we know that many countries have vaccines that are stockpiled and they may be sitting on shelves. And the thing is, if you want to remove Mpox as a threat to the world, you have to attack it at its source. So it's really in everyone's self-interest to control this outbreak in Africa using vaccines that might be stockpiled in Western countries, because that's the only way that we really remove this threat, is by dealing with it where it originates.
This Mpox epidemic has been around now for a while, like several months. And other nations, including the U.S., did not jump on it and send these doses earlier. Why is that?
There's a lot of complacency when it comes to global health problems, where people conceptualize a problem as being over there and not here, and not thinking about a way to strategically decrease that risk. This isn't just true for Mpox. It's true for many infectious diseases. And it's not just true for Mpox over the last couple of months. This was true. This has been true about Mpox since about 2008, when people started to realize that there was some changing spread of this disease and it was becoming a bigger threat. This is also the case with the 2022 Mpox outbreak that engulfed the Western world, that didn't really lead to people concerned about Mpox at its source. That didn't lead to vaccination in Africa at that point. So it's not something that's unique to Mpox, but it is unique to kind of people having very short-range thinking and very narrow thinking about infectious disease problems, not realizing the global scope of them, and a lot of kind of protectionism and nationalism when it comes to vaccine stockpiles.
That was Dr. Amash Adalja, an infectious disease physician, speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com, and there you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And we'd love to hear from you, and you can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. +1-202-258-3076. We'll be sharing our listeners' comments on Africa News Tonight. The White House says President Joe Biden will make his long-awaited visit to Africa next month. He will travel to Germany and Angola from October 10th to the 15th. Biden had promised during a summit of African leaders in Washington in late 2022 to visit Africa the following year. The summit was part of an administration effort to shore up ties with the continent, in part to counter growing influence from China. But Biden did not make it to Africa last year. Now, with just a few months left in office, Biden will meet in Berlin with German leaders before he travels to Luanda, Angola, for meetings with that country's president. Ethiopia's foreign minister has warned that ammunition supplied to Somalia could exacerbate conflict and be diverted to terrorists. His statement came a day after an Egyptian warship unloaded weaponry in the capital Mogadishu, the second arms shipment since Egypt and Somalia signed a security pact in August. Egypt-Somalia ties grow amid shared mistrust of Ethiopia over its plans to build a port in the breakaway region of Somaliland. David Monda, professor of political science at City University of New York, discussed these latest developments with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shinawi.
It's a balance of power between different regional actors and regional players. So on one hand, we see Somalia attempting to consolidate its regional place within the Horn of Africa by getting into this security pact with Egypt on one hand, but also with receiving a reinforcement of armaments on the other. And this is to directly consolidate Somalia's place with the threat of Somaliland trying to break away. On the other hand, we have Ethiopia trying to balance Somalia by getting into relationships with Somaliland to undermine the government in Mogadishu. And then we also understand that Egypt has its interest in the Horn of Africa because it's playing these two, Ethiopia and Somalia, against each other. By backing Somalia, it's undermining the regional dominance and power of Ethiopia in the Horn of Africa by also allowing Somalia to strengthen its position and to balance out with Ethiopia. So Somalia looking to advance its interests by aligning with Egypt, Egypt looking to undermine Ethiopia by aligning with Somalia, but Ethiopia also pushing back by saying that some of these weapons could end up in the hands of not only Islamic insurgents like Al-Shabaab, but let's also not forget that there's a big Somali minority in Ethiopia. So Ethiopia is also concerned that maybe some of these weapons can get into the hands of militants, rebels in Ethiopia who want to break away from Ethiopia and rejoin Somalia. So there's a lot of regional dynamics going on over there.
So what could the Egyptian military backing of Somalia lead to?
It could lead to an escalation of regional conflict. As Ethiopia has mentioned, there is a possibility that Somalia could channel some of these weapons through proxies in the Ogaden region in the southeast of Ethiopia to create civil war or problems in Ethiopia. I think that's one of Ethiopia's big concerns. Ethiopia has its own problems in Tigray. The Tigray region has had issues with Eritrea in the past, and Ogaden, the Somali region, opening up that front would also be problematic. But I think in terms of a balance of power, this Egyptian support for Somalia is destabilizing that balance of power because Somalia seems more powerful and stronger. And I think that's a direct threat to Ethiopia. But I also feel that Egypt is trying to reassert its influence in the region, particularly with Ethiopia's aggressive moves to the Great Ethiopia Renaissance Dam and its rejection of Egyptian claims to unfettered access to the Nile waters. I think that's also has something to play into this dispute, the challenges that Ethiopia and Egypt have had.
In response to the agreement, Ethiopia signed with Somaliland to lease 20 kilometers of its coastline in exchange for possible recognition of Somaliland's sovereignty. Somalia threatened to expel by the end of the year Ethiopia's troops who are there as a part of the peacekeeping mission to fight Al-Qaeda-linked Islamist insurgents. Who could fill the security gap if that would happen?
Should Somalia demand that Ethiopian troops leave, that will create a power vacuum in Somalia, because as we know right now, the Somali government does not control a lot of territory outside of Mogadishu. So if Ethiopian troops were to leave a lot of the areas in the rural part of Somalia, we may end up with Islamic insurgents, particularly Al-Shabaab, getting influence in that region. But to your earlier question around Ethiopia's agreements with Somaliland, Ethiopia is a landlocked country. And I think part of their design around aligning with Somaliland was to get an access to that huge borderline of Somalia. Somalia is the largest coastline in Africa, and that region of Somaliland will be key to Ethiopia's access to the Red Sea and global maritime shipping lines for its exports abroad.
That was political science professor David Manda at City University in New York. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed Al-Shenawi. Sudan's former autocratic president Omar al-Bashir, who ruled for 30 years before he was toppled in a popular uprising and then jailed by the country's military rulers, has been transferred to a medical facility in northern Sudan. The Associated Press quoted Bashir's lawyer and said the 80-year-old former leader was moved from a military facility on the outskirts of the Sudanese capital Khartoum the previous day. The lawyer says al-Bashir's health had deteriorated recently, but that his condition is not critical.
Hello! This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.